Supreme Court, the People's Republic. I'm going to start with the only poem I have that has anything vaguely to do with court. And I just plan to kind of meander down a little river of poetry and kind of a mishmash, really, and then we'll end up in Alaska for the last half a dozen poems. This is called Middle-Aged Student Signs with Candace, Kate, and Jean. Pink trees rise in the heat. They are shamelessly showing off, and I've been talking a lot about men lately. Two hunks came to our speaker series, I tell Danny's friend, who is himself quite dishy, though born yesterday. But that John McKenna and Justin Hill, Jesus, they are handsome. McKenna, the cocky vegetarian who probably makes love while Leonard Cohen spins on the CD and clouds move silently overhead. And Hill, born the year I graduated from secondary school, I can close my eyes and see his sexy bald head, hear his lotus blossom voice, drowned in his silky words. It's spring, we all laugh, it's spring. I'll forever be a blow-in. Next couple poems are about my life of being a blow-in. This one is called Lemon. Poor, steeped in alcohol, puffy-faced and panacheless, the viper desired coffee and a lift home, or so he said. My daughter took three steps back when his foul hand put a 10-euro note in the pocket of her yellow raincoat. Too big to fit in the back seat, I offered him the front. We sped along in smothering rain. I talked of his wife. As predicted, he whispered, "Can I ride you sometime?" "Don't talk to me like that." Insult crept over me like oil and water. His wife was happy to see him. I wondered why. Wanted to scour the car, eat parsley, bathe in lemon peels. This is yourselves ache. When you are uprooted, yourselves ache for the familiarity of frost on your beard, desert sand in your ears, the hack of a machete on breadfruit, or the rattle of your neighbor's truck signifying work well done. Uprooted, you miss the gush of the creek over pea-yellow snow and the steady positioning of stars that have taught you everything you know. Yourselves ache for the heat of the arm that reaches to pick up the baby, or the knock on the hut from the old man who made you dandelion tea. Yourselves ache for a friend who will tell you by the look in his eyes that you belong here, because he knows your people read the mountains before they search for marlin or slap dirty clothes on rocks. You are constantly hounded by the cellular ache of music so out of tune, hounded by puffy white bread, unnecessary use stuck between an O and a consonant, too many people who chat about the weather when what you long for goes way beyond the lovely day stage. You were unearthed by fancy, or chance, or persecution, or because you knew too much, or you thought you had too many choices. Now yourselves desperately dig, but there is no loam in the west, only brambles sculpted southward that cling to a slippery moonscape. You realize that this homelessness will kill you the way the jolt of a shovel on a raspberry runner kills the shoot but not the main plant. Despite daily infinitesimal aches, yourselves know that, in time, you will once again be a red raspberry or a hat on a hook. One day the wind will blow the right direction and you'll land in the homeland garden surrounded by forget-me-nots who did remember. women that see have a chance to get. This one is called Dancer Nobel. When I tiptoe down the killing errand stairs into the sea, adagio, I become a ballerina, cool, cradled, free. I'm a single mother of a gorgeous little girl named Lily, and we live on a pretty tight budget, but the one thing that I allow myself is an aquafit class twice a week. So this is called Ladies Who Pool. Belly fat churns the chlorine, hips bounce south and west, arms flash, legs stretch. Fabian yells, rich, rich. 18 uteruses thump to a late night club beat, back and forth, side to side, kick higher, rich, rich. Arms to sky, legs to bum, touch your heels, run, run. Right leg up and back, bend, kick, hop, kick. Cross country ski, push, push. Shoulders underwater now, long arms higher, higher. Kick back, rich, rich. Middle-aged ballerina lips pierced into huffy nose. We slice silver aqua and adore Fabian, for whom we would march off to peace. Powered by mighty strong legs, gifted to us by our thick-plaited Brazilian instructor from Gort. Breathing slower in the sauna, we talk of the Gaza and Obama. For this hour, I'm comfortable and at home in my Galway skin. Dear Aphrodite, I haven't had intercourse for 15 years. Perhaps you and your muses can help. I'm 80 now, alone but not lonely. The sea is my passion. It reminds me of your birth. When foam rushes over my toes and engulfs my womanliness, it's then that I miss being a vessel for Adonis. I let him slip away. I also get bothered when I garden. It's something about the freesia fill there, the softness of an earthworm, something about the touch of glaciers who deposited chocolate soil now steamed in soft rains. Intoxicated, I want to advance to the sun, be toasted in pleasure, slathered in salty butter. The moon is full tonight. Poets engrave Caspian, fairies strum mandolin, grapes grow plump in the heat, and my cherry lips swell in anticipation of your silken response. Yours, earthbound, Ethel. This one is, has two revenge poems. This is my first revenge poem. I was told by an old poet about 10 years ago that every poet needed two poems about their mother and at least two revenge poems. And it's called Old Boyfriend Who Luckily Never Got Caught. If you were a fish, you'd be a flounder. You fancy yourself a salmon, a sockeye, or a king. Sleek, sought after, expensive, wild. Spawning, how is spawning? But you are a flounder, one-sided, flat, lights off, a bit listless on the bottom, thinking that you are spawning, always spawning. This is called September Heat. When I close my eyes, I see blackberries. My stained fingers touch the clean sheets, but not you. I scream with whisper, risk it, chance a juicy embrace. Our first middle-aged kid awkwardly waits upstream, just one stile and two fields away. Let's grasp the breath-hot quickening of sharp edges made soft. And yet, I get the message, friendship must do. It's just that for copious nights you have been the peasy blackberries on the back of my eyelids. Risk us, a stickery bramble, even a burning nettle, are worth the night view of blackberries just before sleep. Say congratulations. First pee in the morning is most reliable. My room was pink when I awoke at 6. Pink as a little girl's birthday cake. Pink like the princess dress my niece wore when she was little and her only ambition was to be a princess. The lawn was pink. Fitzgerald's barn was pink. My navy blue car was pink. I wished Michael was with me to share the fleeting sunrise before pink turned apricot. The changing light of daybreak lasts about as long as it takes to eat an apple. Where was Michael this morning? Gray fog meandered across the fields, paused as if to say, don't jump to conclusions. Perhaps it's the menopause. Perhaps you are upset about something. I pulled up my white nightgown, inspected my breasts. They were sore and full of purpose. Tender. Everything so very tender. Bladder ready to burst. I peed on a stick. My period is 10 days late, or is it 11? 12? I haven't peed on a stick for 20 years. Jesus, I am 44. Mine drifts to my old boyfriend, the one I should have married, Johnny in Arizona. He's so Hopi, me so Irish. He used to laugh, pull me closer, say, you're not a white woman, your skin is pink. Can't look, must look. I lingered on the toilet a moment longer. The pink in the sky and the field and the barn gone now, sucked into the stick. A daughter. Her name is Lily, and she'll be 11 at Easter. She's a bright, interesting little girl who's full of youth, and she has Down syndrome, and she's in ordinary school in Oranmore, and she's doing absolutely brilliantly. She's a fierce good reader. Not too great at math, but she's just a really wonderful little kid. But it was really hard giving birth to her in Galway and being on my own. And I don't know if you're familiar with a poet named Mark Doty. You know? He was at Corch a couple of years ago, and he helped me tidy up this poem. And I think it could be an important poem for people who are raising a child with a disability. It's called Atlas. Unlike some of your friends who were born with Down syndrome, you have no bowels to be stitched, no heart needing repair, no intestinal blockages. You were my lucky lily, but then the icicles dropped. Dripped in the spring thaw. First, tiny tear duct syringe. Second, a grommet inserted in minuscule ear. Third, tear duct syringe again. Fourth, tonsils and adenoids removed. Fifth, another grommet for each faint and finer ear. Five times they stuck in the cannula, dressed you in a tiny gown with teddies. Five times I sang to you while the anesthetist put masks over heart-shaped lips. 5 times he went limp, disappeared behind sterile doors. 5 times I shuffled down the hall, tried to read, write, stand, sit, questioned my faith, then prayed. Minutes gonged. 34, 42, she's not quite awake, 46, 47, 48. Then you gave a groggy smile. I stroked your baby body, cooed at my broken bird. A nurse stood by you while I ran down 3 flights of stairs, inserted 8 long coins into silky foam, told my mother in Alaska, really fine, fine, just fine. Me too, I lied. I wanted the icicle to stop dripping so we could shut the hospital door, make friends with people who are not doctors, find someone who could hold up half the flag this once. Revenge poem. It's called A Pint of Milk. You have been a nagging cough, a niggling lump, a twitching eye. Remember that desk your boss gave you as your boy, the desk you used at the table with your second wife? I sanded the grayness off, sanded your smirk, rubbed and rubbed your Lord Guinness babble, turned your venom into a pile of frothy dust. I wore a white mask. I sanded your inability to hold anything dear. I sanded your delightful penis, laughed at the smart suits you wore to funerals, pretending. I wore the sandpaper thin when I saw you walk away from the hospital the day you abandoned our delicate daughter. I sanded your hand that waved at me as though you were off to buy a pint of milk. I scraped the legs of poetic promises, washed the murk away with warm suds, felt the softness of the sponge, drank tea while the surface dried. Then I painted you robin's egg blue, smothered you in 2 layers of gloss, admired my shiny reflection. Days later, I touched the smoothness of my daughter's words. My mom's the writer in the bathroom. You are dead. Sanded into extinction, I put a candle on my desk and lilies, and made a vow to never again give you the dignity of a poem. Quite fond of those poems. I think they're lovely and often underrated. There's a man whose name I should remember now, who wrote a whole book of prose poems just about catching fish. And it's brilliant. Do you happen to know his name, Kate? He's an American guy. It's hysterical. But they're all prose poems, but whacking the head off the fish. I'll think of the name before the night is over. This is a County Clare Sunday. You hop over tidal pools along the flaggy shore. Flat stones whirl and twirl beneath your size 1 pink shoes. I see blurry maps, miniature canyons, glacial tapestries. You know to avoid slippery seaweed and purple poo dropped by birds who gorged on blackberries after the first frost. You are surfed lively. We sit on a stone to watch a single swan fly towards the lake. You notice the noise of her wings, the straightness of her neck. She's trying to tell us something, you say. And it's eerie how a muffled noise from the swan does sound like an urgent message. Then you see a stone shaped like a fish. There's the fin. There's the head. It's swimming to Alaska. You hop and I walk over more flagstones, burned hills roll beneath us. I think of Seamus Heaney's poem about the flaggy shore. It does blow your heart open. We don't stop until cragginess disappears. Then we climb over wet grass to the narrow road. You dive under the alluring fence because, still surf lively, you want to hike up the hill. Thinking the fence is electric, I cry and yell. You cry and yell, fall into muck. Fences are such riddles. Tears from lifetimes ago drop down my cheeks. I wrap you in swan arms, my mighty daughter who sees the world through senseless eyes. The big thing about people with Down syndrome is they can absolutely do anything. And the one thing, they're as different as you and I are, but the one thing they all really need is speech and language therapy, which is not enough of in Ireland, and we've been not looking great in that spectrum at the moment either, but I've been following Lily's language development, and she's really an incredibly verbal girl. The girl I thought would never, ever talk, now doesn't ever shut up. But this is a poem about her. Her language started coming on at age 3, and this little poem is a brief look at her, say, from age 3 to 5, called Dreaming. The strange thing is that she's overpronounced things. I think just getting them straight in her head, but this is Dreaming. Banana, nana, nana, elephantante, lello, Vaughn appeared. Nanny's tar tuck, go backer, tip knee, gank you, super callous, scratchy, gorgeous, something like that. Suddenly you say, good morning, Mary Patricia, I dreamt of a sixth elephant. I know I shouldn't, but I dread the day when Lello becomes yellow. And she doesn't say yellow anymore, she says yellow. am I okay for time? Yeah? Okay. We'll move on to Alaska, where I was born and raised. My parents were Chicago Irish. My dad flew, and my mom flew from Chicago to Anchorage right after World War II. When the American government didn't know what to do with all the veterans coming home from the war, so they opened up lots of land in the west, including the far northwest, Alaska. So my parents got 160 acres for free if they farmed it and built a house, and they were essentially trying to get people to settle the west and the north. just a wonderful place. If you ever get the chance to go to Alaska, jump on it. It's bigger than life. People are pretty magnificent, except for our current governor, who is a beautiful woman, but absolutely somewhere in Newfoundland. This is called August Lament. In Alaska, fireweed blooms, salmon cooked in a canner, aspen trees shimmer in the zephyr, and jeweled broccoli grows tender in sweet pea-filled air. Peggy transforms gentle cabbage into coleslaw, boils new potatoes, and welcomes night almost long enough to sleep, if you want to. The promise of berries in lower slanting sun cushioned within balmy lichen quicken her force as she prepares dinner. Outside the kitchen window, spent salmon fight upstream, exhausted. Friends land with raspberry cordial and halibut ceviche. My old mother shoes a sauntering moose away from the garden with a tea towel. The feast is spread. Conversation dances, forks clatter. Here, I want to, but rain and longing wake me. I suppose I'm a bit like the Irish who went all over the world generations ago, and they spend a lot of time longing for Ireland. And I live in Ireland, and I spend a lot of time longing for Alaska because it's such an amazing place. You can never really leave it. You take it with you. In my teens and 20s, I worked on a commercial salmon fishing boat, and it was a great way to make a good few $1,000s in the summer, and it was just a good, what Alaska kids did, and still do, and this is a poem for Tom Temple, the best captain I ever had, the Sarah M., named after his mother. I lay half awake, fishing for sleep. An amber streetlight blinks outside my Galway bedroom window. The pulsing reminds me of the channel marker in autumn darkness announcing Seldovia Bay. Expecting anyone, it bobs alert in the starlit swell, welcoming tired boats. We unload wild silver salmon at the freezer plant. We are slimy this frosty morning. The timber footpath, almond slippery, leads us to hot showers and a chat without the Sarah M's engine roaring. Everything's motionless except knees tripped by solid ground. We know we should point her bow across the bay to Homer, but we can't. Neptune tugs, just one more run, one more big-hearted load before snow dusts the mountains, before life becomes ordinary. Years later, you were fishing for herring alone in Alaska's Bristol Bay, west of nowhere. Your ankles swelled big as a flower pot. Miraculously, you got yourself to Anchorage. Heart failure. Nonsensical news. You not yet 30. Slushy snow blossoms into lilacs while we wait. Each beat weaker. Slowing rhythm. Transplant. I think about you daily. Decades later, while the amber streetlight bobs so far away, I marvel that the doctor gave you a new heart more full of love than your old. I had a heart transplant 25 years ago now, and I'm still doing fine. It's amazing. Tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of the Exxon Valdez oil spill. I don't know if you heard much about that in court, but it was a huge, huge, huge oil spill, and Exxon, the pilot of this huge oil tanker was drunk and ran into a reef that was well marked and well known about and everything. Anyway, this is huge word. There was 8 by 15 mile stretch of oil in the sea, and it was pretty horrendous. And the native people who lived along the shore are still recovering. And so that was 20 years ago, it should have been 89. So this poem will take you to Alaska in 1959, when oil was first discovered. It's called Quantum River Oil Field, 1959. These Alaska poems are pretty much inspired by Elizabeth Bishop, because I think she does a great, she has many series of poems that where she speaks about herself and her upbringing in a really intelligent, kind of unapologetic way. And I think it's the poet's duty to really let people know what we know. And we all know so many different things. I think it's our job to really share some personal intimacies with the reader or the listener. In fact, Seamus Heaney has loads of definitions about what poetry is, and my favorite definition of his is Heaney says that poetry is putting tongue to other people's silence. So, back to Fountain River Oil Field, 1959. We piled into the purple door Chevy, Peggy, Eileen, and Francis in the back, me, Mom, and Dad in the front, after bath, after mass, after lunch, all six of us eager to witness progress. At age 7, it felt like heaven. We drove 25 miles on gravel, dust flurried around birch groves, hung over virgin lakes where corporate explorers plowed through the hills like a war was on for profit. And it was. Mom acknowledged every berry patch, blueberry, cranberry, maybe red currant. Slow down, loose on the left. In our Sunday finery, we stood on the banks of a perfectly rectangular pond and admired thick, black, crude oil. We put some in a mayonnaise jar. Even though we just met the devil, Dad took a family photo as if it were Easter. My mother is 89, doing very well, still lives in Alaska, and I was telling Paul that she just stopped cross-country skiing a few years ago, and now is still snowshoeing because it's, the chances of falling down on snowshoes are pretty slim. She's amazing, and I often think about how incredibly brave she was to raise four children in Alaska, but especially at that time when there wasn't much there except very good Native people and the wilderness. And she was a little Chicago beauty who was quite a fine artist. I don't know how she did it, and I'm not sure that I ever could, but this one's for my mom. It's called 24 Miles to Calvin Island, 1961. My brother Francis and I motor away in the open dory. Fred is at the outboard, squinting and barking orders. His wife Louisa covers us in wax tarp, fussing and protecting her borrowed children. The swells grow. Our mother stands on the beach, hands in new pockets. The Russian Orthodox onion domes on the bank silhouette overhead. We wave madly, and stare at her diminishing figure. Hook in the gray engulfs the door, fills the mother space. Why won't she wave? Why won't she wave? 10 miles out, Louisa adjusts nets, tools, groceries, heaves a rusty red tank of gasoline to the stern. I can't see the shore. My brother says he sees a dot. The bow plops into each swell, engine off, silence, white, bare, white everywhere, a pod of blue the whales, rise, disappear, if I was brave, my 9-year-old hands could touch their surfacing white skin, stroke them for mother comfort. Horrible governor in Alaska is the federal government wants to put beluga whales onto the endangered species list, and when I was a kid and had that experience in the dory with the whales. There were thousands of whales in the Cook Inlet, and now they know that there's 164. my last poem, and it's called Summer Right, 1969. Thank you very much for listening. This is, when I was 17, well, I'll let the poem speak for itself. Summer Right, 1969. High style for us cannery girls with a brightly colored bandana, blue jeans able to stand by themselves, a white oilcloth apron which made us look like birthday candles, and sometimes mascara. Sickening smell of salmon pressurized in torts, beeping forklifts, metronomed machines, canner, litter, boiler, boxer, screaming foremen, and icy hoses blasting fish guts down the slime line. Wild salmon thumped monotonously through the guillotine. Then a shameless beauty stuck our fingers into the headless cavity and shook ruby eggs into the slanting tray, tossed the guts onto the concrete floor. And finally, the 10:30 whistle. Seagull-filled July air, Bob Dylan's North Country Fair. Coffee, donuts, and mad flirting with college guys from sexy Seattle who talk of Carlos Castaneda. Below the cannery, curvy and prone, lay the mouth of the Kenai River, dotted with testosterone-filled boats, waiting for a cannery girl who would say yes to Cook Inlet and all that she held. Thanks.